I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Ryan Holt. Ryan is the chief of police for the city of Waco and is also the assistant city manager. He discusses his thoughts on the demonstrations across the country protesting police brutality, the ways the Waco Police Department has largely remained above the fray, and how policing might evolve in the future to provide better outcomes for citizens, both civilians and officers. This is the most important topic of conversation happening in the country right now, so let's hop onto the interview. I'm now joined in studio by Waco Police Chief and Assistant City Manager Ryan Holt. Welcome to the program.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
What is your Waco history?
Well, I've been here just under 25 years. Moved here after my wife and I both graduated from Stephen F. Austin State University over in Nacogdoches, and I was looking for a police job. Applied at a number of organizations around the state at the same time, and we had, as young people do, we had decided whoever hired me first is where we'd go. We knew a little bit about Waco growing up in the Bryan-College Station area. And so when Waco offered me a job, we came here and been here ever since, grown to love it.
Were you one of those kids who wanted to be a cop when you were little?
Not ever. You know, like a lot of young people, I got into college, went to A&M, was a business major, and really discovered it wasn't where my heart was. And as so many young people do, I really struggled with what I was going to do for the rest of my life. You know, that's kind of a big thing you have to decide at a young age. I think my 20-year-old is going through that now. And, you know, I went through two or three different things, and then I remembered I had attended a Citizens Police Academy when I was a senior in high school at Bryan High. A guy by the name of Choya Walling, who worked at Waco or at the Bryan Police Department, always had a senior from Bryan High School and a senior from Consolidated A&M High School in their Citizens Police Academy. And when I was a senior, I had that opportunity. And when I started looking back on that experience, I thought, you know, that was really something noble and could be something that I wanted to do. And so I started looking into it more and more. And the more I looked into it and did ride-alongs and really looked at what it was that police were doing, and particularly the local police, decided that that's where I wanted to focus my collegiate efforts. So transferred from A&M over to Stephen F. Austin because A&M didn't offer criminal justice, still don't, and finished my degree in criminal my undergraduate degree in criminal justice at Stephen F.
Well, why would Aggies ever need criminal enforcement?
I know, right?
You know, we're all just such good folks.
Yep.
I do remember being a student at A&M and being shocked at the amount of law enforcement in Bryan College Station
because
you have the A&M police, mm-hmm. you have a constable's office, you have a sheriff's office.
Yeah.
You couldn't get by with much.
There are 22 law enforcement agencies in McLennan County alone that all do their work here in McLennan County. So
you've been serving in Waco for 25 years
yep.
or so, and
yep.
you came on as the chief of police.
Well, I mean, obviously I started as a police officer and worked my way up through the ranks and worked in every division of the department. Was an assistant chief for 7 years, just under 8 years under then Chief Brent Stroman. And then when the opportunity came, when he decided to retire with, you know, 39 years of service, which was pretty significant, and they did a national search, and I threw my hat into the ring, and you know, they, by judgment, they chose me to fill in for after Chief Stroman. I've been doing that ever since.
And was the difference between if he had stayed for 40 years versus 39?
Well, you know, that was a personal decision of his, and you know, when you've got that much time in something. You know, as I understand it, every you know, day counts more than when you're in your early career. But he made that decision. We talked a lot about it. And, you know, working for Chief Stroman was a master's class in management and leadership every day. And so we've just tried to fill his shoes in the years since he's been gone.
What was something that Chief Stroman taught to you that you've made sure to implement now that you're in the catbird seat?
Well, it's about timing. It's about, you know, if you're going to make change in an organization, there's always the right time for it. Chief Stroman always set very high standards for police officers to operate by. And we have continued that expectation of our officers that they will perform to high standards, but also that they have a bright ethical line in the sand. And everybody knows where that is. Chief Stroman was always about doing the right thing. Trying to live up to that is important.
You did a recent interview with the Waco Trib, which if you're listening to this now, I would encourage you subscribe to the Waco Trib, but also go to the website, check out the video. You go into depth on a lot of these topics. And one of the things that you said that I thought was kind of interesting, there's the forthrightness coming from someone of your position, was you admitting, I think police officers should be held at a higher level of accountability because of our duty to the public.
Yeah.
It seems that even though chiefs across the country probably feel that way, there's a lot of the public who think that a chief thinks that my police officers should have carte blanche and they can make whatever decisions you want. Can you talk a little bit about the public service component of being an officer?
Yeah, I think if you really dive into what is it that the policing authority or where is it the policing authority comes from, it's a privilege that is bestowed upon a select few men and women across this country to wear a badge that essentially represents the trust of the community. That's what that badge represents. And that's a pretty significant thing. And it's not just of the community that pays taxes. It's of the community that doesn't have resources to help themselves as well. And so we have to be very careful as police that we don't pander to one community or another, that we don't only serve one community or another, because the reality is we serve a lot of communities that happen to live in Waco, Texas together. We have to be careful that we always do the right thing and serve the greater good. And sometimes that means disappointing some people, but it's about the greater good every time. It's about doing the right thing and suffering the consequences. As a police officer, you know, you're one of the few people under the Constitution and through judicial authority that can deprive people of their civil rights by taking them into custody against their will. And so that's why we hire people that tend to have a little more life experience. They have not only wisdom, but they have discernment on when to use that wisdom. I think when we talk about being held to a higher standard, we have to recognize that the authority we're given, that we can take somebody's civil liberties legally through due process. I think with that power, I mean, it sounds cliche. Power comes, you know, great responsibility.
We've all seen Spider-Man.
Yeah, Marvel, you know. But the reality is those cliches usually come from some point of truth. I've taught a number of ethics classes in my time, and you really have to use that as your starting point. Is okay, what is the role of police in America? Where have we come from? What was the point of policing? What was the point of civil service? How does it fit into the criminal justice system? I have to remind people often that we are just the entry into the criminal justice system. The criminal justice system is much larger than the police. Frankly, most everybody else in the criminal justice system are elected. The police in most cases, municipal police in most cases, are appointed, hired, and appointed by an appointed chief that reports to elected officials generally, or in my case, I'm appointed. I report to an appointed official who reports to elected officials. So there, you know, it was intentionally created originally, municipal police, to create some buffer, some continuity against ever-changing politics. And I think right now you could articulate that the political environment in our nation is strained at both directions and at both ends, and the police are still required to do their job and serve all communities at the same time.
I want to hone in on what you had talked about a couple of minutes ago, the intent. We're all trying to get to the basics of what is the intent of policing? What does good policing look like in 2020? And this is a question that is being asked in communities across the country, and it is one reason why we are seeing demonstrations against police brutality, and that's been played out nowhere more clearly than in Minneapolis, Minnesota. What do you make of these demonstrations happening across the country?
Well, I don't have any doubt. After having attended Race Equity Institute training brought here by Cooper Foundation and Waco Foundation and others in the city and other programs, that there are institutions in government and other institutions in the United States that deprive people of color of the abilities and certain rights. And so I think because of the, you know, we didn't get here overnight. This has been hundreds of years of, I don't know any other way to say it, but systemic racism. And you have to be careful about using those kinds of words, because people will try to pick up those words and make them, you know, things that they aren't. But there is systemic racism, and police are just the public-facing arm of government. And so, in our past hundreds of years, anytime there has been unjust laws or unjust policies, it's been laid on the heads of police or law enforcement to enforce those unjust laws. And so when you put on that uniform and you put on that badge, you essentially take on all the sins of your forefathers. And we can't just say, well, I wasn't involved in that, so why are you blaming me? You can't do that. Because anytime you have an interaction with a member of the public as a police officer, there's two people there, at least two people, and both of you have perspectives. And so as a police officer, our perspective is not more important than the other person's. It may be equally as important, but we need to know what the other person's perspective is, because remember when I said a minute ago that we serve all of our communities? Well, each of those communities thinks of that uniform and that badge as something different. It's a symbol that means something different to all these different populations that we serve. And so, you know, as far as protesting, I think I've been clear from the beginning that it's part of our duty. It goes core to the duty of the police to ensure that people's rights, particularly under the First Amendment, are protected, regardless of what it is they're saying, whether it's directed at us or at some other system or some political disagreement they're having with somebody. We have an obligation at the root of our authority to protect their right to do that, so long as they're not injuring other people and they're not damaging other people's property.
We don't often see the videos of the peaceful protests. We don't often see the videos of the police officer who is being yelled at and called a pig and being spat on and still standing there stoically and not responding. There was one great video of an officer, a black officer in Minneapolis. You could see him mouthing underneath his mouth guard, "I'm black and I'm proud. I'm black and I'm proud." And it's easy to think of these police officers as outside actors who are coming in and trying to influence what's going on. But really, these are people who are in our community. And once that shift ends, he's still your neighbor who's pulling in the driveway. I do think that we're in a particularly difficult position with what we ask these police officers to do, because when you call 911, it's the same number you're calling for the murder as you're calling for the cat that's in your tree or your wife who's yelling at you. And I think we put an undue amount of stress on police officers, expecting them to be excellent in all of these different fields, when personality-wise, maybe you're really good at calming someone down, or maybe you're a sharpshooter. I think that that's the core of this push to quote-unquote defund the police, to take away some funding that has gone to police and allocate that towards other community-based resources. Where do you stand on that idea?
Well, I do think that we are asking police to do too many things. The reality is that when no one else in the community is willing to solve a problem, the community calls the police. I've said for a number of years now, I've done some work on the behavioral health leadership team, And I've said, you know, why would you want police to be your entry into the mental health system in America? It ought to be social workers and psychologists, people who are trained in mental health. Yes, we train our officers in mental health, but by the time police officers are called, people are in crisis. And in crisis, that can mean being violent. That can mean being armed with a gun or a knife and or tearing things up. And when that happens, when people are in crisis, your tools suddenly get very narrow. And our officers do a tremendous job. The number of mental health emergency detention orders that we're doing a year has been ever increasing. I think we had another 36% increase just in this last year. The officers then end up sitting with folks for sometimes days at a time in order to get them into the mental health system, to get them the appropriate care. You know, for a number of years in Central Texas, you know, there is a sort of a national conversation about mental health, about why are police putting people with mental health in jail. Well, in Central Texas, at least, like a lot of things, we've been ahead of the curve and we've been diverting mental health consumers in Central Texas to mental health treatment. But the system has been defunded. The mental health system has been defunded by a state and national government for quite a number of years, and the number of beds available for treatment of people in crisis has gone down dramatically. There are long conversations at the legislative level about that, and you know, where is the money going? Services, our local MHMR is a tremendous group of people doing a lot of tremendous work, but they're underfunded. And so mental health is just one of those things. Police don't have any criminal jurisdiction in mental health because it's not a crime. And the jurisdiction we do have is under a civil code, which is the only civil jurisdiction we have as municipal police officers. We give police officers quite a bit of training, but you're asking a police officer, whether it's their 24th year or their first day on the job when they arrive, to diagnose somebody and determine whether they're hearing voices or, you know, if there's some other diagnosable, you know, DSM-5 diagnoses, and maybe there's comorbidities and numerous diagnoses. Maybe there's some contributing effects of narcotics use, and police officers are expected to diagnose that on the scene and figure out how to talk somebody down that may be hearing voices from people who aren't there. And you know, if that person pulls a gun or a knife, your options become very limited at that point in time. Or if they become violent and they fight, there's no criminal culpability there. They don't necessarily mean to hurt you, but it doesn't. It still hurts nonetheless physically. You know, if you get punched in the face by somebody who doesn't mean to, it still has the same effect as somebody who meant to. If somebody shoots you, even if they didn't mean to, it still can kill you. And so, yeah, I mean, that's just one of a number of things that are laid at the feet of police to solve because other folks don't want to fund properly or to solve the problem. You know, we've been working through a lot of partners here, governmental partners and medical partners in Waco, McLennan County, to come up with an alternative system where you would have a multidisciplinary team of mental health workers, medical workers, at least somebody from law enforcement to go out and to help mental health consumers before they go into crisis, keep them on their medications or keep them going to their doctors, because a lot of these, you know, they're functioning members of our community. And remember, we said earlier, we got to serve all of our communities, all the populations that happen to live in Waco. Well, they're certainly one of those communities we need to assist. And so we're trying to identify funding for an alternative service delivery. And so I sort of don't agree with the terminology of defund the police because I think that portrays the wrong message because you have to have police in a just society. You know, all you got to do is look back, you know, in history books before there was formalized police and you see political corruption in the system and a lot of other things. And so you need law enforcement and a just society. But I do think some of the things we're being asked to do is beyond what we should be. You know, the reality is we answer 100,000 calls for service a year in Waco, and the majority of those calls aren't crime related. And so I think there needs to be some kind of robust discussion in this country about what it is we want the police to do. And it can't be everything.
You're hearing from Ryan Holt. Ryan is the chief of police for the Waco Police Department and is also the assistant city manager for the city of Waco. One of the calls across the country is for greater transparency, and body cams is an easy way to provide that. To me, it makes sense because you are making sure that the citizen is not having their rights infringed upon, but you're also protecting the officer, and you can have someone who claims an officer did something, really they didn't. Does the Waco police wear body cams in every interaction?
Yeah, so we issued body cameras in August of 2018. We have a very forward-thinking city council and management staff, and they allocated. It is a very expensive endeavor to put a body camera on every sworn person in the department, but that's what we did. Officers are supposed to have that video on in most encounters. So if a police officer goes into a convenience store to buy a snack, you know, during their shift, they're not required to have it on. The state law says you can't require an officer to have it on their entire shift.
But of those 100,000 calls you get, you said a certain amount of them are criminal. The majority of them are not. If it's a criminal call, are they required to
turn
on the
body
cam? Yeah,
they're supposed to have it turned on. Now, there's some, you know, they're not going to solve every problem, and there are going to be times when an officer doesn't have it on because they have to worry about their safety and the safety of others first. They don't automatically come on. In some situations, if you turn your overhead lights on a police car, the body cameras automatically come on. If you turn a taser on in the vicinity of the body cameras automatically come on. But and we've had this happen, an officer gets out of their car, and before they can get their body camera turned on, somebody attacks them. The officer needs to worry about their safety first. And so we have had situations where an officer has to defend themselves or defend somebody else in an emergency, and the body camera didn't get turned on. When we were talking about body cameras with city council, I told them, look, take a look at the Super Bowl. There's hundreds of cameras at the Super Bowl, and we still miss things at the Super Bowl. And so, in an interaction with a police officer and one citizen or police officer and five or six citizens, you know, we might miss some of those encounters. And so you can't count on them being the panacea for everything. But you're right in the fact that one thing that body cameras do is it shows the interactions, the day-to-day interactions between our police officers and our community. And what we see is that our police officers generally do that the right way. And we've had a number of situations where a citizen would call in to complain about the officer being rude or some other thing, and we'd say, well, let's watch the body camera footage. And they said, oh, there's footage of that? Yeah. And then they would drop the complaint. So we go ahead and watch it because we want to see the interaction, and we want to see what it is our officers are doing. And the reality is our officers are doing a lot of really good things.
Let's keep the time frame from your period of service as chief of police, and it could even be specifically in the last month or so. What's something that you used to believe about policing that you've changed your mind about?
I don't know. That's an interesting question for sure. One thing that is about perspective is if you're brought up in an organization that has always done things as close to the right way as you can. And so that's your perspective about policing, is that you treat prisoners with respect and you treat individuals you're dealing with common decency and respect. I think your perspective is that policing as a whole is like that. Just like some people on the other side of the argument may say, you know, well, this one police officer in Minnesota did bad, and so everybody must be bad. So from a police officer standpoint, If you've only policed in one organization, and that's fairly typical of police officers, they make careers of 30 years, 40 years of service with one organization. I think perspective can sort of be clouded in that, well, if we always do it right, then everybody else must do it right also. And so I think one thing we have to do as police officers is recognize that there are 400,000 police citizen contacts a day in this country. And so there is a potential that some officer in some other agency in some other state might do it the wrong way. And so we just have to be very careful, just as if we admonish people who want to complain about the police for lumping all of us into one category. I think we also have to be careful about that, of saying, well, we all must be good. And I think we have to recognize that in every profession, doctor, lawyer, judge, whatever it is, radio show host, that there is a potential that, you know, as human beings, somebody could do something bad. And so we have to recognize, and we have to be willing to at least have a conversation about policing, that there are things we could do better. And so it's perspective, you know. I have a deep place in my heart for police officers because I've seen them thousands of times under very difficult situations, getting shot at, getting spit on, getting stabbed, getting run over, physically run over by cars. And I've seen those officers come back and do the right thing thousands and thousands of times. But I also have to be willing to have the conversation about the fact that there potentially could be some wrongdoing in this profession that we have subscribed to.
And policing in America seems unique because the country is so large. There is such a high percentage of people who own guns, 400 million guns at 330 million people. And then also everyone has a smartphone these days. So any possible infraction is probably going to be videotaped by someone. So it does lead to this false sense of the police are all out to get me, or it's a bunch of bad actors, when really I would encourage everyone, listen to the interview that Chief Holt gave to Wake Up Trip, listen to Downtown Depot and hear the empathy with which he talks about serving this community. I think that the city of Waco is in such good hands with you as the chief. I'm excited to see who our next chief of police will be, and grateful that you have stepped into the role of assistant city manager. We didn't get to talk about that today, but we'll have to circle back and see what the plans are there. So this is Ryan Holt. He is the chief of police for the Waco Police Department and the assistant city manager in Waco. Thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Absolutely. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks again to Chief of Police Ryan Holt, for all of our officers serving McLennan County, and to you for tuning into Downtown Depot. I'm your host, Austin Meek, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.